Well, now it's time to bring up our guest speaker today, who's not a guest, but she happens to be my daughter, and she happens to be part of this church since she was 5 years old. That's how old she was when we moved to California. And Erin is, those of you that know her to be a woman of excellence and a woman of character. And it's an amazing thing, you know, every parent raises a daughter, but or son, but she never has looked back. She never went through that phase where I'm not sure I believe or don't believe. She just believed from the very beginning and has believed all the way through, and she believes now more than she ever believed. And so God has used her and Mike together ever since Cade had his tumor and stroke. It opened up a whole new life to them, not one that they expected, but one that they have embraced and pursued. And you know, I and us too, our whole family, we went to Cade's baseball game yesterday, and it was kids with muscular dystrophy and autism, and then they had a whole cheering section of little leaguers up there. When they'd come up, they go, Cade, you're my man, go Cade. And all these kids, you know, Down syndrome children turn around and they're going like this and waving. It just blows me away, you know, what God's doing and how good he is and how much all of us, regardless of where we come from, are fearfully and wonderfully made. So it's just an amazing thing. So would you receive my daughter, Erin?
So good to be here this morning, and I was just so blessed by these girls on this front row. I'm like, I don't know if I'm tired or emotional or what, but I about cried at that, cried at the song, or having a daughter, because sometimes you want to kill them, and sometimes you want to love them. So I've just been reminded of how fast it goes. I remember, and any of you mothers in here probably have had this happen to you, but it never happens when things are wonderful. It usually happens during a tantrum or like you're exhausted or you didn't sleep, and you'll have a seasoned mom or a seasoned grandmother or somebody tell you, you know what, it just goes so fast. Just enjoy it. And I remember thinking, not fast enough. So I just have been trying to do that, enjoy it and embrace the moment, because man, cleaning out kids' clothes shows you how fast it goes. And it's emotional sometimes to see, like, I just don't want to regret not loving it. So probably I'll cry. Maybe I'm tired. I don't know. Or emotional. But I am so honored to be here to speak this morning. And whenever you speak on either Father's Day or Mother's Day, I come with this just feeling that not everybody has an awesome story to tell, or they think they have an awesome story to tell. But I do want to say that this morning, no matter your mother, your situation, whatever it may be, your loss, you know, for some that have had miscarriages, for some, this is their first Mother's Day, for some, it's their first Mother's Day without their mom. All these different emotions are embraced in a morning like this. But what I do want to say is God never wastes a hurt. Sorry, Courtney, looking at you. He never wastes a hurt. Can I have some tissues just in advance? This is going to be. He never wastes a hurt. He never ignores your heart's cry. So with that, thank you. Wish it was like this at home. Coffee. No, just kidding. We needed that laugh. But I just want to encourage all of us that we can have grace for our stories, grace for what God's doing, grace for our journey. I was thinking about Psalm 139:13 that talks how he intimately knows us, that he knit us together, that he formed us, that we are remarkably, it says remarkably and wonderfully made. And all of us in this room have been created on purpose and with great detail.
And when I reflect on the mothers who have gone before me and having a mother and being one, some things come to mind. But I can't say it as well as this video does. Cue the lights.
And right there's the heartbeat.
Do you have any kids?
3, actually.
Wow, that sounds crazy.
Crazy? In the best way possible.
So what's it like being a mom?
Mom, I ain't feeling too good.
Oh no. It's okay, Sugar Bear. Let's just go in.
Sorry, Mom.
Oh, it's okay, sweetie. Next time, we'll just run to the... washer.
Why are you watching me sleep?
Because you're my baby boy, and I love you.
Still creepy, Mom.
Oh my God. So, does this mean you're grounded for the rest of your life? Yes. Yes, it does. So, in the future, you and I can just refer to it as the monthly visitor.
Stupid. Why am I so stupid?
What did you just say to my son?
What?
My son is not stupid. My son is smart. He was formed by God's hands. He was dreamed up by his heart. And he was placed in this world with a purpose. You, my son, could never be stupid.
What? Mom would never do something like that. She's way too predictable.
Oh, I know, right?
How's that for predictable? Nostradamus.
Do. The summer's gonna go by so fast, and we still have to pick out my dorm room furniture.
Slow down.
What?
Maybe I'm not ready to let you go yet.
Mom.
Yes, Mom. That's who I am. Is it so bad that I just want to take care of you forever?
You already have. Everything you've done for me, everything you've taught me, I'll take it with me wherever I go. You have taken care of me. For life.
So what's it like being a mom?
how much time you got.
Doesn't it say it great? It's a hard job to be a mom, but yesterday I was kind of caught up in this kind of moment, and we had the opportunity to hear a speaker that spoke to a group of men, and one of the things this woman was saying is that in your wife is the girl, the little girl, that's still the fun girl that you married, but she's just tired. And she's doing a lot of duties, and she gets her game face on, but she's still in there. And she talked about to the men how to get that fun girl back and help tag teaming and looking for ways to help. And I just love that. And yesterday, my fun girl came out, and I was like, oh, there she is. I was kind of surprised myself. It's been a while. And we had a spontaneous game of wiffle ball that I also was digging down and found my inner athlete. It was fun, and it turned into this spontaneous game of our neighborhood that doesn't normally happen, and couples and their kids were out, and it was so fun. And I just came back in so refreshed thinking, wow, those are the moments. And I thought how great it is to have those moments where you can create these memories and you can laugh at yourself, you know, enjoy life, and I always think, like, in my own life, I'm, you know, Mike's my sounding board all the time, listening and so encouraging. But as moms and as women, we can constantly feel like we're not doing that thing. Like, we're almost at our thing. When I get there, that's what I'm supposed to do. But Mike reminds me that thing is the little things that you do. And I just love that food fight. How great is that? The mom's like, oh, yeah, fun girl's coming out. So I just want to encourage us that the thing is the little things that you do over and over and over again. The legacy of the mom who has gone before me, I think about lately, I've been thinking a lot about that. I've been thinking about my grandmothers, Mary Davenport, my dad's mom, Lucy Hubbard, my mom's mom. And I'd often wonder, what kind of legacy would they tell me they wanted for my children? Did they pray for my kids? What did they hope for my kids? Growing up, I remember asking them questions about their childhood. We loved hearing their near-death experiences and how that could have changed our whole family line. We loved hearing about the time when my Nana almost drowned in a lake, and we were like, where was your mom? I don't know. But the dog saved her life, and we loved hearing these amazing stories that we didn't forget. My own mom, she's hardworking, unassuming, kind, thoughtful, doesn't give up, shares the truth, loves with her actions, and she works really hard when she's tired. I'm still working on that one. I love the story of my mom. She was a twin preemie. Her twin passed away in the hospital. She survived. She's a fighter. Her father passed away when she was young, and she was raised by a hardworking single mom. Her faith journey is awesome. She came to the Lord through her art teacher, who had boldness to share with her the courage of what God can do in her life and how he can transform her. It was through that very teacher that my mom came into a saving relationship with Jesus, and her mother too. Later, my aunt and uncle all came to know the Lord through that seed that was sown. The word of God does not return void. The way she loves art, and she went to art school and loved all kinds of quirky people, my dad would say. In art school, not now. I love the story of how her and my dad have met and how they fell in love and how, even in the quiet way, my mom made them work for it. I love the journey of our family moving across the country from the East Coast, leaving all their family, to the West Coast, knowing nothing, and embarking on this wild adventure called SCC. I love that my mom did it, even when it was hard. I love that she may have been scared. I love that she honored her husband. I love that she models her life openly. I love you, Mom. See, you know, I'll be fine. But I come with that, and as was shared earlier in Timothy, Paul writes to Timothy that your reputation of your grandmothers and your mother has gone before you. And that's how I feel this morning. I feel their reputation and a faith is deep down inside of me this morning. Today, I have a couple, there's so many different women in the Bible that we could highlight this morning. And Esther is, this kept sticking out to me this morning, was as preparing as such a time as this. So as a mom, it's such a time as this. You were created for this generation. You know, not an easier time, not a harder time. This is when God picked for you to be a mother, a friend, a wife. In chapters, I'm just going to overview for a minute. In chapters 1 and 2, Esther becomes a queen to Xerxes of Persia. She was personally chosen by the king. The king loved her more than all women and found favor and kindness with him, probably because of her beauty, intelligence, it is thought. Chapters 3 and 4, Mordecai, Esther's guardian, refused to bow down and pay homage to Haman, a high official of the king. Haman becomes infuriated and plots to destroy all the Jews in the kingdom because of his pride. Mordecai hears of the plot and reports it to Esther. Esther says, "I can't just go in and talk to the king. He'll kill me." He replies, "For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, and you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have not attained royalty for such a time as this." Chapters 5 and 10 talks about how Esther outwits Haman and takes her petition to the king, and he pleads for protection of the Jewish people from Haman's wicked schemes. The king, out of anger, has Haman hung on the gallows he had created for Mordecai, which was built to destroy all the Jews. Esther's faith and courage saves her people. Esther's background story is both of her parents were deceased, and she was a beautiful girl. It says she was beautiful in form and in beauty. And it talks about how Mordecai took her as his own daughter, and he invested in her as his own daughter. And if you know the story, you know, it's sometimes referred to as the first beauty pageant. When Xerxes' wife didn't come to him and parade in a party to show off her beauty, she said, "I don't want to do that." And it kind of got word to all the other men, and their wives started not wanting to do that either. And he said, "That's it. Your crown is off of you, and we're going to find a new queen." It's a beauty pageant. And he brought in all these different young virgins, and Esther is the one who caught his attention. This little girl who lived with Mordecai, he doesn't even know at the time is a Jew. And she was in this opportunity and this position for such a time as this. And Mordecai, it doesn't say all of this in there, but I have to imagine their talks. Like, "This is a great opportunity. You know, he had invested in her in so many ways that when she came to that hard place, it was in her." And I think it's interesting that the book of Esther doesn't mention God, but he's all over it. Isn't that awesome? I really think that there was a, can you pull up the verse that I only have one verse that I'm going to put up. And so just so you can see it, if you remain silent at this time, what are times as parents, as mothers, that if we remain silent at this time will happen? Because God is so good at capturing our hearts, he gives us these gentle warnings. This is the time, this is the time. And here, she had really her father who had stepped in to encourage her. "If you remain silent at this time," I can read this way, "relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, and you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have not attained royalty for such a time as this." That right there is a moment that I know as a mom, if I would have said something to like my children that way, that's not just a gentle, that was your whole life is on this moment. You need to pause and think about this. So many times I've been in situations that are hard and I've had that come to my mind, such a time as this. Do not think that I have not put you here for this moment. It's never about what it's about, if that makes sense. I have to admit, because it's funny, whenever I am, you know, whoever comes up here to speak, You have some soul searching to do that week, and I had a really bad attitude this week. And I really got before the Lord, and I just, little things were getting at me. And I just, it's so great when you can just be raw and open. And when you speak, you always have that opportunity to be raw and open up here. So I really was with the Lord, and I just am reminded of the time that the Lord has put before us. And he's saying, this is your time. This is your moment. This is what I'm calling you to. This is what I rescued you for. This is what I redeemed you for. This is what I'm calling you to. Do it. And it's not this big moment. Sometimes it is. Like Esther, there was a moment. But she had to walk it out. It wasn't like, okay, great. It was a very, very scary time. And I think as we read this, I don't know how old she was, but I'm just thinking about her getting all this wisdom about a man from Mordecai, and who knows what all that was like. But there's moments that we have that can change the entire thread of our family. And that's what I love. I love that there's some situations that aren't great. And I love that some of us get to be the one that says, right here, right now, it's changing. I love that some of us get to carry the baton of faith and keep going. I love that that the Lord entrusts us with his story to go out and do the thing. If you're at the women's retreat, we kept saying that, do the thing. So if you weren't, that's okay. We've talked a lot about this morning about mothers and grandmothers and even a great-grandmother, but I wanted to hear a little bit about a great-great-grandmother. So I have recently had the opportunity to hear a dear friend of mine pour out her family line of what God has done in her life and how she got to where she is. And it amazed me so much that I have asked her to share with us for a moment. Erica Norton.
Drum roll, please.
This all came about because of a text yesterday. Mm-hmm. I texted Erin and said, I'm praying for you as you prepare to speak tomorrow. And she wrote, want to share something? I'm like, glad I texted you. No, I'm happy to. So we were talking about what she was sharing this morning, and she said, I just keep thinking about the story of your great-grandmother and the path of your family line. And so I thought I'd share it this morning and hope it blesses you. And in preparing for my testimony and what I spoke at the women's retreat, it was amazing to look back on my family line and see God's hand in it. And for any of you that haven't done that, it's a pretty amazing way to see God's hand in your family and to see him moving. And there weren't even believers in my family. And that was amazing. So those of you that know, my dad is 100% Armenian. My whole family, obviously, on that side is Armenian. And this happened in 1915. We just actually celebrated the 100-year Armenian genocide. And so in 1915, there was a genocide between Turkey and Armenia, the Turkish people having a massive massacre of the Armenian people. And this story has been passed down through our family. It was my great-grandmother, my dad's grandma. And she was 5 years old during the genocide, and her entire village was wiped out. Every single person. They came in, massacred her entire family. And one Turkish woman, and the way it actually hears back is that she was a believer. It's hard to fully know the whole thing, but one Turkish woman decided to hide my great-grandmother under her skirt and smuggle her out of that village. And every single person had died, except for this one little 5-year-old girl. And she took her as her own, and she smuggled her out to Egypt, and she raised her. And she raised her in Egypt. So my dad grew up with stories from his grandmother of the pyramids, and I mean, such a faraway life. And she raised her, and then she was a mail order bride to an Armenian man in Michigan and Detroit. And that's how my family came to be. So they came, she came, she was a mail order bride, she married this man, and then they heard that all the Armenians were moving to California, to Fresno, to plant crops, because it was similar crops they could plant, dates and raisins and things, as it was in Armenia. They moved over here. That was my great-grandmother. And the rest of that family, the reason I brought this up even at the retreat is there was no believers in either side of my family. Not one believer on my dad's side, not one believer on my mother's side. And my parents, I just owe everything to them. I feel like that God just got a hold of them at such a young, my mom, he just wooed her, like in junior high, he just wooed her to himself. She had a completely non-Christian home, and God just pulled her in. In his 20s, my dad found the Lord right here at Presbyterian Church of the Master off Marguerite and Oso. And I said this at the women's retreat, but there was so much power in a family line where there's no believers. And to see my parents break such family ties, and a lot of really difficult things had happened in both their families, and for them to draw a line in the sand and say, like, our family, we are going to serve the Lord. And I just encouraged the women at the retreat that I got to grow up under the blessing of two parents that were believers and had a Christian home. But it was just one generation before that it all changed. And so for so many people in this room, I know this is Mother's Day, but for the mothers and the men, so many of you get to be that generation marker for your family line. And I'm just so thankful to see the way God weaved it. And for this woman, this one woman's act in 1915, this one woman who decided to take a little girl under her own and become her mother, changed my entire life. If she hadn't done that, there would be no me. And it was really amazing to me. And even Johanna brought it up when I said my testimony. She said, and then you became a believer when you were 5 years old. You know, just to think that many years later that there would be Christians in our family. But it all started with one woman being a mom. And a mom to not even her own biological child. So I hope so.
So amazing. I am so humbled by that story, and it makes you want to live more intentionally and more courageously. The woman that took in Erica's great-grandmother, think about Mordecai. And I think about looking for such a time as this and being open. The other part of being a mother that is challenging is when you can't control outcomes in your children's life. And I'm really thankful that we can't, because I know that God really sees our hearts more than he sees or even cares about the outcome. He doesn't care how long it takes us to get back, as long as he gets you back with your heart. And one of my main tools is prayer. And I know I've spoken on this before, but I think it's too good to not be reminded of the power of prayer and a mother that has a heart of prayer. When we talk about Hannah in the Bible, we think about how she was barren, how when Elkanah, her husband, had two wives and the other one was fertile and having children and would mock her and tease her and make her feel bad. And Hannah was constantly living in that shadow of her, yet her heart is what captured her husband. And there was a time when Hannah was praying so strongly and so fervently that her own husband thought she was drunk. And she said, I am not drunk. I am pouring out my heart to the Lord. There's a place as a mom that we can go to battle where others, you know, and again, not taken away from the father or somebody else in their life, but as a mom, when we go to battle before the Lord for our child, I know that he has mercy on us and he hears our prayers. Hannah was spiritually disturbed, socially disgraced, and emotionally depressed because she was barren. And her rival would just provoke her to irritate her because she was jealous. But as we read in Samuel, we see how God heard her prayers and blessed her with a child. I think about this morning, Moses' mom. When she had Moses and became, it talks about in Exodus 2:11, I'll just read some of this. She became pregnant and gave birth to her son, and she saw that her son was a fine child, and she hid him for 3 months. But when she could not hide him any longer,
She made a basket for him and coated it with tar and pitch, and she placed the child in it and put it among the reeds at the bank of the Nile. I can't even imagine doing that. Why did she do that? Did she do it because she thought this would be fun, a little experiment? No, she did it because the other option was death. They were killing all the baby boys. His sister stood at a distance to see what would happen. Then Pharaoh's daughter went down to the Nile and bathed, and her attendants were walking along the river brink, and she saw the basket among the reeds and sent her female slave to get it, and she opened it and saw a baby. He was crying, and she felt sorry for him. "This is one of the Hebrew babies," she said. Then his sister asked Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and get a Hebrew woman to nurse the baby for you?" So picture the mom putting, really picture this, a baby in a basket down the Nile. This isn't a Ladera Ranch lake, okay? All kinds of creatures in that. And putting it down and trusting God. And then God provides a way for Moses to still be with his mom. Should I find a Hebrew woman to take care of it? Ta-da! Here's his mom. "Yes, go," she answered. So the girl went and got the baby's mother. Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take the baby and nurse him for me." Imagine her like, okay. "And I will pay you." And, okay. So the woman took the baby and nursed him. When the child grew older, she took him to Pharaoh's house and he became her son. So again, it's almost like twice she's given him away. But all under the umbrella of trusting that she doesn't know how the story ends for such a time as this. And I thought about her. She did the hard thing. She named him Moses, saying, "I drew him out of the water." Putting her son in the Nile River to save his life, Pharaoh commanded that all the baby boys be put to death. His mom hid him for 3 months, then sent him out to the Nile River in a wicker basket covered with tar and pitch, placing him in a basket among the reeds by the bank of the Nile. Change the course of history. This mom seized the moment for such a time as this. She did what she needed to do, even though she wasn't comfortable. It wasn't the culture. It was scary. But she had a deep faith that there's a bigger picture. I love that when Mary was the mom to Jesus, when she first was told that she was going to be with child, I love that Gabriel was so nurturing to her in this, because I can't even imagine being told as a virgin woman that you are going to be pregnant and all the cultural norms that you're going to have to face. But they saw something in Mary that she loved God and trusted him. And she carried the Son of God. Mary's song in Luke 1:46-55 says, "And Mary says, 'My soul glorifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior. And he has been mindful and humble state for his servant. Now on all generations will call me blessed, for the mighty one has done great things for me. Holy is his name. His mercy extends to those who fear him from generation to generation. He has performed mighty deeds with his arm. He has scattered those who are proud in their innermost thoughts. He has brought down rulers from their thrones, and he has lifted up the humble," thinking about Esther. "He had filled the hungry with good things and sent away the rich empty." He knows our hearts. "He has helped his servant, remembering and being merciful Abraham and to his descendants forever, just as he has promised to our ancestors." God sees, he knows, he's paying attention, and it always goes back to our hearts. And I was thinking, again, going back to that little girl, moms, that little girl, what were your dreams? What were your ideas? What were your bad attitudes, right? What made you mad? What made you tick? All these different things is still in you, but now you're a mom. Last year, I shared about Dr. Ben Carson from his book, Taking a Risk. This year, he's running for president. But he talks in every interview about his mother. It was his mother It was his mother that said to him, I'm going to pray about what to do with you. Isn't that a scary thought? Especially if your mom knows how to pray. I'm going to pray. He was lowest in his class. He was nicknamed. He was an at-risk kid. He's very open about that. He said, I am the definition of at-risk kid. And remember the story of how his mom told him, you're not going to watch TV. You're going to do 2 reports a week. I'm going to read them. And that's that. And then later he found out that, you know, his mom never could read. And she would just check it off. So they thought that she was reading his reports. Even in our inability to be perfect, God uses us. And the heart of prayer, like Hannah, that poured out and asking God, what can I do here? What should I do here? I felt like as I share, I definitely know less than I used to. I mean, that's real. You hear that, but it's really true. I really remember saying, and I don't know if I said it to my mom, but I definitely thought it, like, how hard can this be? I'm the oldest of 4. I was a teacher. I babysit a ton. I taught children with autism. I mean, I've seen some big fits. I think this is, you know, you're nice. You love them. You're it's going to be great. I don't think I was a weekend that I'm like, help. So, and those of you that have kids grown or are in the middle of teenagehood or approaching, I've heard it's physical now, it's emotional later, so you're just going to be tired for a while. But the reward is so worth it. Staying the course, doing the little things, doing what counts when nobody's watching, the family dinners, the wiffle ball games, the dance parties. Throw them off their game. You're not that predictable, moms, okay? Laughing, praying with them, listening, having their friends over, being nice to that friend that drives you crazy, but they love. All those things, your home, your prayers, your life matters so much more than you think it does. And I can tell you, when your kids are grown, I mean, again, I think there's been so many stand-ups about this. Your kids never move out. They always come back. Ha, ha, ha. Well, I can say I still need my parents. I still need my mom. It's in a different role. And if those of us who don't have children or those of us who don't have their mom, I love that, like, Mordecai is such an example of a gap filler. The Lord doesn't leave you barren and desolate. He fills gaps. It's what he does. Everything in the story, every story in the Bible, you read about where there wasn't a way, and he makes a way. There wasn't food, he provides food. There wasn't any other option. And I'm starting to realize God loves no other options. Because he makes a way. It's a story. Right now in this room, I mean, it gets me excited just to look at each one of you. Each one of you have a story, a legacy that is being written for your children. I started thinking about what will my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren remember about me. What do I want my legacy to be? And it's just, it's so exciting to know that we can be influencers like that. And I hope that you feel encouraged that knowing the little things, the things that seem boring, the things that don't matter, are really the things that create the home, that create the times where the memories are made. And I am so honored to be a mom. I'm so honored for those of you who have been like a mom to me. I'm so honored to see, I mean, when Steve came up here and I just seeing what their family has done for kids that are grown, you know, their kids are grown, but seeing how they've poured out, I want to be like that. It's just, we're so rich to be in a community that has models for us like that. So I just encourage you moms, I thank you for working so hard. Stay the course. It's worth it. It's worth it, and you're making a bigger difference than you think. Amen.